Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up at 10:30, we will have live coverage of a news conference by President Bush. He is expected to release a progress report on Iraq mandated by the Democratic Congress, and this is considered a pivotal moment right now for the war policy. This news conference could be very newsworthy with this report being released today, in which the president will at very least acknowledge only mixed progress in Iraq, so we will carry it live. But right now, the city of Newark this morning is holding events to commemorate the 40th anniversary of the Newark riots, which began on July 12, 1967, 40 years ago today, leaving more than 20 people dead, hundreds wounded, and businesses destroyed. For some reason, there's a lot more talk about the riots this year than on previous big anniversaries, but ironically, that may have more to do with Newark looking forward right now than looking back. Another irony, rumors abound this morning that former Mayor Sharp James might be indicted today, and we'll talk about that too. Clement Price is professor of political science at the Rutgers Newark campus, and he joins us now. Professor Price, welcome back to WNYC. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
Where were you in July of 67? Living in the area yet?
Certainly living in the region. I was about to launch a graduate study program at the University of Bridgeport in history, and the 1967 disorders here in Newark influenced me very much. My master's thesis was a study of 20th century urban violence.
So what's been on your mind the most this week as the anniversary was approaching and it's been getting all this media attention?
Well, what's been on my mind more than anything else, Brian, is the fact that Newark, 40 years now removed from 1967, is commemorating that year, the events of that year, the riot and its repercussions like no American city I know of. There were about 128 incidences of racial upheaval or disorder that summer. But Newark, more so than any other city, and more so than, say, Detroit, which had a much bigger uprising or riot, Newark is embracing the memory of those days. It is commemorating the loss of life. Actually, Brian, there were 26 people who lost their lives.
I said 23, so yeah, I was low.
No, so, okay, but that's important on a lot of levels. So I'm impressed with the fact that more than a generation removed from the summer of 1967, the city of Newark is remembering and also dedicating itself to a much brighter future.
You know, I don't remember anything like this much attention to the 25th anniversary, which is always a big anniversary of things, or the 30th 10 years ago. Is something different this year? Does it have something to do with the contemporary context of what's going on in Newark?
I think it has to do with two things. First, we're more than a generation removed. And once you get beyond that 32, 33 years, people do look back with a broader imagination for the past, and also they complicate their memories. So that's one thing that seems to be new. Secondly, and maybe equally important, there is scholarship on what nearly brought Newark down before the riots of 1967. We now know, for example, that Newark, indeed throughout northern New Jersey, the most important thing that was happening was the suburbanization of northern New Jersey, which weakened Newark and in many ways set up Newark's most vulnerable moment, and that would be the moment in the summer of 1967.
One New Jersey journalist friend of mine says, black snipers were to the Newark riots as weapons of mass destruction were to the Iraq war. In other words, none were ever found, none probably existed, but they were the excuse for the National Guard to go in with guns a-blazing. Do you like that analogy?
I think that analogy works very well. Again, the most recent scholarship suggests that the black sniper was an incredibly grand and most unfortunate mythology, which tended to radicalize feelings on both sides of the riot issue. And the mythology of the black sniper played into an image of African-American men that survived the riots.
How did that happen? Was it misinformation or disinformation that led the police and the National Guard ultimately to be shooting at each other, a lot of friendly fire, taking people down when they thought they were being shot at by others?
Well, there's a recently released documentary film that suggests three things at work. One, the Vietnam War, when they really were snipers. Secondly, this was a period in Newark's history in which there were very stark images of what was unfolding on the streets of Newark. And third, I think maybe most important, what better way to justify the extraordinary harshness of law enforcement and the behavior of the state police and the National Guard than to suggest that their lives were imperiled by black men standing atop high-rise public projects with rifles in hand?
But the spark that ignited the riots also turned out to be false, that a black cab driver was killed by police after being arrested for a traffic violation. So was misinformation all around to blame for all that happened?
Yes.
Or was it inevitable based on underlying conditions in the city?
Well, I argue in some of my work that what's surprising is not that Newark had a riot, but that the riot occurs so late in the last century. I think misinformation is at work, and always in terms of racial violence in this country, rumor is at work. The alleged beating of John Smith can now be proven, but the rumor that he died in retrospect was most unfortunate.
Clement Price, professor of political science at the Rutgers Newark campus, my first guest on WNYC. We'll talk in a few minutes to David Cruz from the Newark Public Radio Station, WBGO, and we will take your phone calls with David Cruz on what the riots mean to Newark today and the state of Newark today looking forward. You can call now and get in line for that at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. If you lived in Newark then or if you live in Newark now. Dr. Price, Sunday's New York Times quoted an activist from that era, Junius Williams, who said, after the riots, the city and state took some positive actions to help Newark because, quote, when we sat down at the bargaining table, an unnamed person with a brick was sitting with us, unquote. Do you think there was a time when fear of riots drove government policy?
Yes, I do, and I know Junius quite well. And he's made that argument over the last decade or so. I think the notion of a resumption of the riots, the fear of a resumption of the riots, found its way into the articulation and implementation of more benign public policies toward the city of Newark and maybe other American cities. Keep in mind that the 1967 was the most violent summer in American history, and the specter of that continuing through the rest of the 60s and into the 70s really did influence the way public policymakers and politicians and civic leaders looked at their responsibilities.
There were many urban riots in the 60s, as you say, but they are very rare today, even though racism and anger and hopelessness are still widespread. What's the difference today?
The major difference might be the election of black elected officials in top jobs, such as the mayor. We've had three African-American mayors in Newark since 67. Secondly, the desegregation of city agencies, especially the police and the fire department, which was a big issue in 1967, not to mention the desegregation, if I could use that word again, Brian, of the National Guard and the state police. I did some work 2 years ago with the state police, and they were in the midst of a very active affirmative action program, trying to not only bring more minorities into their ranks, but more women into the ranks. So law enforcement, 40 years after the summer of 1967, acts differently and looks differently.
There seems to be a new optimism about Newark in the outside media, at least, because Mayor Booker strikes many as a forward-looking leader compared to Mayor James. Is that a widely held view inside the city? Is it one that you share?
It's one that I share, but let me complicate my answer by saying it depends on who you speak to. There are still people in this town that believe that Sharp James saved Newark, and Cory Booker, Mayor Booker, has yet to prove that he can take Newark to a higher level. Newark is a very tough town to save when you look at what had become of the city over the course of the 1970s and 80s. And some, and I'm one, believe that that Mayor James did implement some policies which arrested the hemorrhaging of spirit and optimism in this city. In other words, he stabilized the city, and he began the city's, he led the city's long climb, not to the top yet, mm-hmm. but long climb forward.
And how would you rate the progress under Mayor Booker so far after about a year?
Well, the streets are remarkably cleaner under Mayor Booker, and that's important. He's also placed education on a pedestal far more than any of his predecessors in the last half century. And third, and perhaps most importantly, he's drawn a lot of positive attention to Newark through the spirit of his leadership. So a lot of people who had pretty much written off Newark, say 20 years ago, now are taking a second and a third look at Newark, and they're seeing through Mayor Booker's administration an opportunity for Newark to make even greater strides.
Before we go on to WBGO newsman David Cruz and listener calls about Newark, and we'll talk with David Cruz about the widely rumored, it's in a lot of newspapers, that there's going to be some kind of announcement by U.S. Attorney Chris Christie today, and many people think it could well be an indictment of Sharp James on some activities when he was in office. But what kinds of events are you taking part in today before you go?
Well, the mayor has called for a commemorative event out front of the 4th Precinct where the disturbances began in the summer of 1967. There will be a screening of a new and fascinating documentary titled Revolution 67 in the Central Ward at 12 noon. Rutgers University will sponsor a conversation between former Governor Brendan Byrne, who was Essex County prosecutor in 1967, and the current Essex County prosecutor, Paula Dow. That's it, by invitation only, conversation at the Newark Museum. And the New Jersey Performing Arts Center is, as a part of its Sounds of the City this late this afternoon, will have a moment of silence, a very reverent reading of the names of those whose lives were snuffed out during the riots. And at the end of the day, Mayor Booker will be on WBGO and will receive calls from the region.
All right. And WBGO's David Cruz coming up next with your calls at 212-433-WNYC. Coverage of the president's news conference with news expected about the Iraq war coming up in 10 minutes. Clement Price, professor of political science at the Rutgers Newark campus.
Of
history,
yeah.
I'm sorry. Okay. And we talked a lot of history today.
Yeah, we do.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank
Dr.
you,
Price.
Brian
Lehrer on WNYC.
Okay.
The warnings of the impending disaster were sounded often for many years. This is the story of Newark, but it has been the story of riots in many cities. It may have come to your city already. And if the lessons of Newark aren't learned, your city can be next.
The 1967 news report after the Newark riots, which did begin 40 years ago today. We'll talk more about Newark then and Newark now, right now. And don't forget, we will take President Bush's news conference on Iraq and other issues coming up in less than 10 minutes. We just heard from Clement Price. Now we'll open up the phones briefly for people from Newark. If you lived in Newark 40 years ago or if you live in Newark today, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. What does this 40th anniversary of the start of the riots mean to you, if anything? And what is the state of Newark today? And with us to help take your calls and give us some of his own analysis is David Cruz, reporter and anchor with Newark's public radio station, WBGO. Hi, David. Welcome back to WNYC.
Morning, Brian.
And I want to ask you about this uncomfortable irony that here on this 40th anniversary of the start of the Newark riots, there are rumors that former Mayor Sharp James might be indicted on criminal charges this very day. The Star-Ledger says for weeks a federal grand jury in Newark has been considering evidence involving city land deals and travel expenses that James billed to the city while he was mayor. And U.S. Attorney Chris Christie has scheduled a news conference for this afternoon. The grand jury has been meeting on Thursdays, which fuels the speculation. Do you know anything about this?
We don't know anything yet other than what you've just said, Brian, but it's turning out to be a very weird day here in Newark. You know, you have this potential indictment juxtaposed against the, you know, the somber day here. So we're waiting to hear from USA Chris Christie as much as anybody else is today.
One of the ironies of this happening today, if it does, is that grand juries never did return any indictments in connection with the riots.
No cause for indictment.
Think that will rankle people in Newark today, jolt that memory if James is indicted?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a wild card exactly what people's reaction will be to that. So far today, a lot of folks don't really know what's happening yet because it's been mostly rumored, as it has been for close to a year now, that this indictment was coming. But it's unclear as to what the reaction will be to that. I know that Sharp James still has a lot of support in this city. And as you heard Clem say earlier, a lot of people believe that Sharp James is, you know, saved Newark.
Let me ask you one of the same questions I asked Clement Price. Why do you think this 40th anniversary is being so much more publicly commemorated than other major anniversaries of the riots, like the 25th or the 30th?
I think a lot of it has to do with people looking forward and feeling that Newark is in a generally good place or better place right now. But it's interesting to note that those commemorations are things that we in the media seem to pay a lot of attention to, and folks in universities and sociologists tend to pay a lot of attention to. But most folks here in Newark go about their business every day, and they think of the riots when these anniversaries come up. But by and large, most folks, you know, they're dealing with the everyday stress of living in Newark.
Alan in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hello. Alan, you're on the air. Do we have Alan? I think we have to press one more button. Now we have Alan up. Hi, Alan.
Good morning, Brian.
Did you live in Newark in 1967?
Actually, I lived in North Elizabeth, but I worked in Newark, and I was assigned to help once the riots were started. It was a chilling. I was recently discharged from the Army. I was a Vietnam era veteran, and since they were aware I was working on Park Place for a company named Penn Mutual Life Insurance, it's seared in my memory. The National Guardsmen were completely out of control. They were just randomly shooting people out of windows. I watched a woman holding her child, and both of them were shot and fell to the ground. It was a horrendous experience. It was like going back into war. It was just terrible. And the fact that there were no indictments, that was chilling. I don't have a strong memory of Sharp James, although I knew him. But generally, he was seen as a good mayor who did his best to try to turn the city around. Mm-hmm. The prior mayor, Hugh Adonisio,
He was the mayor at the time of the riots.
He was terrible. I mean, the things he did were unbelievable. I mean, it was publicized he was linked to the mob, and he did some very brief jail time. But the things that he did to polarize the various communities in Newark, especially the whites from the blacks, it was horrendous.
Alan, thank you very much for your call.
Have a good day.
Important voice. And Ken in Newark, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ken.
Hi. I am calling you from Newark right now, and where I have my business. And I lived in Newark, owned a building here in 1967 in the Ironbound section, which is the Third Ward. And that area was thoroughly integrated, and we had no problems, the sort of difficulties that went on in the Central Ward. I just want to say also that this area of Newark now, which is down back behind Penn Station, is a vibrant, wonderful area of immigrant area. When I lived here, there were only two banks in the entire area, and now there are many banks. So there's a great deal going on in the city now that explodes the myth of Newark being a real continuing problem.
Ken, thank you very much. David Cruz from WBGO, do you share that sense of optimism in the city, that there is progress, that there is a looking forward, and in a way that makes it easier to even look back at the riots today?
You know, it's hard to say that nothing's happening here, but you have to look at it, Brian, in over the last 20 years, 25 years. Folks here have been hearing that Newark is turning the corner, it seems, every 5 years or every 4 years to kind of coincide with re-election campaigns. And it's true that there's a lot happening here, but And the Ironbound's a perfect example of what's terrific about Newark. And there are other neighborhoods in the North Ward and South and West Ward where things are happening, even in the Central Ward, almost at ground zero of where these disturbances took place, is very much transformed. But there is still so much to be done here, and so much of the existing infrastructure, political, economic, social, cultural, all of it is really in need of great, it's really in great disrepair. And it's great to have optimism, and sometimes you need optimism just to stay afloat. But there is a lot of work to be done in this city.
Joe in Newark, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning. I just wanted to comment that I moved to Newark as a child in 72. Out of the Gibson administration, and I remember feeling as a child, reflecting back on it now, that it was as if I was living in a town that had experienced a war. And during the time of the James administration, you talk about the sense of hope. There was that sense of hope when James first took over. And although there's a cloud over his administration now, people really do fondly think of Mayor James, and comparing that to Cory Booker, it's a sense that he's a carpetbagger, that he's bringing a lot of outside people in, especially with the cloud of the layoffs coming, that he doesn't really have a sense of what the people really do need.
Which is what, very briefly, in your opinion, Joe?
You need the hope, you need the optimism, but you also need the connection with the people that he seems to have lost since he took over.
Joe, thank you for your call. We're almost out of time before we go to President Bush's news conference, but David Cruz, how much do you hear that sentiment expressed in Newark today?
There is certainly a certain amount of that. I mean, it's been a year, and there hasn't really been anything that the mayor can say and show to folks that is much different today than it was a year ago. But again, the mayor will say, give me a minute, I just got here. So there is certainly I would say that it's a growing discontent, but so far I think it's contained to those who were opponents of the mayor to begin with. But this is a town where people expect to hear this grand rhetoric, and that's how Booker came into office, and people now want to see something happen, but it's really unrealistic to expect that a year is going to bring much change into a city that, as I said before, needs a lot of work. He gets an incomplete in his first year.
Real quick, has anything changed in a year? Anything substantial?
In a year, the image of the city has changed somewhat. I think the mayor has been much more open and much more accessible to not only the media, but to people in the street and people even who are opposed to him. So that's been a big change. But on the street level, day-to-day folks in Newark, not much has changed.
David Cruz from WBGO News, thank you very much for joining us.
Good to be with you, Brian.
WBGO, the public radio station in Newark.